Cats Run Podcast. Welcome to another edition of Top Secret Guest here on Black Cats Run. Our guest this week won the Massachusetts Connecticut Interstate Cross Country Championship the year after it was won by Alberto Salazar. Ran cross country and track for 4 years at Bowdoin College. He set school records in the mile, in the 1500, in the 3000, and the 2 mile that held up for over 3 decades. He won conference championships, set conference meet records, won State of Maine titles, which for any Bates, Bowdoin, Colby alumni out there, you know what we mean by that. He also set the 3,000 meter record at the New England Division III Indoor Track and Field Championship, which also held up for over 30 years. He does tend to regard himself as being nothing special. His personal bests during this time were 4:07 in the mile, 8:16 in the 3,000 meters, 3:48 in the 1,500 meters, and 9:08 in the 2 mile. He also set the school record in the 4x8. This guest also happens to be my dad, and in his family, athletic achievement is something of a norm. His sister is a 2-time Olympian and 14-time national champion in Nordic skiing, and his dad was a track and field runner at the University of Michigan in the 1940s. For this episode, I have taken our interview and I have put it together in the form of a narrative, and I hope that people will find it interesting to hear it presented as a cohesive whole. If you're enjoying Black Cats Run podcast, you can give us a follow on our Instagram account at Black Cats Run. Send us a message. Let us know if you like these kind of narrative format top secret guest episodes, and if so, we can start to have more of that in the future. Let's get into today's episode.
Joining a track team started actually in junior high because we had a 7th and 8th grade track team. Season was probably 8 weeks, and as soon as the snow melted, we'd go out to the cinder track, and their practice consisted of doing calisthenics and maybe some 50-yard stride outs, and then we might run 4 quarters and 75 seconds in 7th grade and maybe a little faster in 8th grade, and then we'd go to a meet. And I'm not quite sure how the coaches decided what events we would run, but I think I ran the 4x100 relay. I think I was always the leadoff guy. So that meant we'd spent a lot of time in practice doing handoffs. And then I ran the quarter. And no particular guidance or training. And I think the first time I ran it, I had a little suggestion from the coach about taking it easy early on and then trying to run a little harder at the end. And I might have run 66 seconds. And then I feel that somebody else said, no, you just run as fast as you can for as long as you can, which is probably not a bad characterization of running back then the quarter mile. Today it's the 400 because all the tracks are in meters. So I started doing that and, you know, progressed a little bit to the point where at the end of the season, I was able to run 61 seconds, which back then I thought was a big deal. And then Trying to think in junior high if we did any other. Oh, so in the fall we had a football team, so I did that. We had a basketball team in the winter, I did that, and then back to the track, basically the same thing. And I got my quarter mile time down to 56 seconds, which again I thought, I thought that was pretty cool. And then moved to high school, so different coach, much more intensive training, but all still on the cinder track, a lot of intervals. And I was put in the quarter mile again, and my time didn't improve. So that season was sort of a failure. I think there might have been one freshman meet that I went to, and I think the winners were all running 51 or 52 seconds, and I was still running 56 seconds. So then I did the cross-country season. So this would be my sophomore year in high school. And you would think, oh, you're running cross-country, you're going to get exposed to maybe doing some longer runs. But at the high school that I was at, the training we did for cross-country was almost identical to what we did for the track, except the intervals we did were all around the field. And the way I did them was basically, the coach would line you up and he'd say, run, we're going to run around this field and that field. And he would line us up and say, go. And I would run as fast as I could, as long as I could. And then I'd go to the races and I was great for the first 600 yards. And then I would go steadily backwards before I moved from Massachusetts to Connecticut and moved from one approach to training to another. I had 4 years of basically hard, what to me felt like hard intervals. Basically every practice was pretty intense. And so my sophomore year, I probably competed through three quarters of the season. And hadn't, so this was the first year I was running the half mile, and I basically kept running the same time over and over. But I ended up quitting because I didn't enjoy it. So then moving to another high school, moving from Massachusetts to Connecticut, my first season there was cross country, and it was the exact opposite. Everything was distance. Well, for me, distance running, 5 mile runs, 6 mile runs. I can't remember what the longest run we did was, but maybe 8 miles, but for the most part, probably 6-7 miles. And maybe once a week we would do something a little faster. And we also had a cinder track there. It was a quarter mile track. And I think, and again, I'm also getting older and stronger anyway, because now I'm a junior, so I'm maybe 16 years old. So I was like maybe sixth guy on the team early in this season, and then maybe moved up to maybe third or fourth guy, but certainly didn't win any races. And there were a couple of good seniors on the team who always finished a good distance in front of me. But I got exposed to this idea that you don't just have to train on the track and do hard intervals. And so it was a learning curve to find out how to manage going out and just kind of running along and actually being comfortable the whole time. Although sometimes when we got out there, we would try to beat each other up a little bit. Indoor track season there was pretty sad, not much training. And then the outdoor season, there was different coach, but he basically let you do whatever training program you wanted to. And my memory is maybe once a week I would do some intervals with another teammate who also was running. At that time we were running the half mile, and I think I also would run the mile. But for the most part, we'd go out and do easy distance. And I think I don't think my half mile time came down that year, but I think my mile time dropped maybe 15 seconds. And then senior year, I started maybe learning a little bit more about distance training and what it really meant to go out and run miles, would read articles about the famous runners of the day, Frank Shorter, Bill Rogers, who were doing what we thought was incredible miles per week, 120, 140 miles a week. So I think in late fall, I started adding maybe more after the end of cross country season, but at some point I started adding a second run just to try to get my mileage up for the day from maybe 8 or 9 to 12, because I thought 12 was a magic number. And again, older, stronger. So I started having more success in the races. And then I think, I can't remember if you mentioned this, but there was I think my coach suggested to me that another coach suggested that maybe I could aim for the state mile record, which I think at the time was like 407 or 408. And somebody had suggested the way to do that was to run quarter mile repeats in 57. So I think I spent January trying to do that on a 160-yard track that was basically the perimeter of the basketball court. Never broke 420, and at some point I developed some weird leg injury syndrome that kind of impaired the rest of my indoor season and my outdoor season that year. But I had been exposed to the concept of doing things other than intervals, just hadn't really learned how to execute that. When I was in high school, I think in the quarter, we used to talk about the piano on your back. So the issue was, when was that going to happen? In a perfect world, maybe 50 meters or 50 yards from the finish line, but if you overcooked it early on, maybe you'd be 100 meters, 110 meters away, and suddenly it would feel like you had a piano on your back, which is another way of saying your lactic acid has built up so that you feel like you're tying up and you just stagger, which is that was my experience as a quarter miler. I don't know, obviously, what it feels like for the elite quarter milers or people who could run 5 seconds faster than me in high school. But my experience was I could go for a little over 300 yards, and then I just would slowly start to stagger toward the finish line. As you move up to the longer races, so the next race I moved up to after 3 years of running the quarter was the half mile. So I kind of had a sense for how much I needed to lay back in the first lap, because I knew I couldn't run 56 seconds and keep going, but I wasn't going to go out in 70 because you weren't going to be part of the race. And I was familiar with what it feels like to have the lactic start to build up, and you can kind of have that come slowly and sort of control it. So you can maybe be in a little difficulty after the first lap, but you can maybe still maintain that tempo. So, and again, I didn't run fast times in high school in the half mile. I was running around 2 minutes, which is very run of the mill.
In process.
No, I mean, I think I was exposed to different training techniques. I didn't figure it out on my own. And I got frustrated. So I decided not to do it anymore when I was a sophomore in high school. Back then, we didn't run in the summer. So then when I showed up in Connecticut to start high school and joined the cross-country team, I was a fresh start. right? I don't think the back in Massachusetts, the guy who was the track coach was also the cross country coach. You know, he wasn't happy with me when I quit the track team, and I don't think he would have been happy if I showed up for cross country, and I don't know if I would have. So it just kind of worked out, and then just so happened that the cross country team in Connecticut was a very low key compared to the program I had been in previously. It was very low key, just a bunch of misfits. And the coach didn't take it seriously, even though he had a pretty good running background, credentials, was a 4:16 miler, I think, when he was in college, which wasn't great, but it, you know, it showed that he had put in some effort and knew a little bit about the sport. But he was sort of indifferent to how the team performed, and he prescribed the workouts. But like I said, it was a totally different approach to. So it was a fresh start for me. But I think I still had the benefit of the 4 years of the more intensive interval training, which created that muscle memory and awareness of different tempos. So I think one of the first times that came in handy, and it was sort of a funny thing, but I think we had a day where he said, "Oh, today we're going to go over to the track and we're going to run a couple of quarters." So I just went around the track in like 60, very comfortably, and everybody else was running 70 and 72, but that's because of my background. So for me to run a 60, especially now that I'm, you know, 16 years old and not 13 or 14, it was not a big deal. I wasn't figuring this out on my own. I had been exposed to this other stuff. I hadn't put the pieces really together, but I think I did benefit from the first 4 years, and then I benefited from the next 2 years with a different approach. And again, the training in high school wasn't super intense. We were probably running, you know, 30 miles a week or something. And then I think the next change happened when, you know, I went to college, and it was a different, you know, a little bit more intense in terms of doing the distance and how you ran the distance, and the racing was different. Yeah, so when I arrived in college, again, the approach of the coach was very similar to my last 2 years in high school. They basically let you manage. I mean, they wanted to know what you were doing, but they did not, the coach did not impose a specific program. And the expectation was, so for example, in cross country, that the leaders, the older kids on the team would be the leaders and would sort of establish the routine. And there was regularity to it. I think when I was a freshman, every Tuesday we would always go to the track and do quarters. But otherwise we did, you know, we were on the roads, and then on, you know, we ran on Sundays. We would run, back then we thought it was a long run. It was a pancake out and back, and I think it was barely 12 miles. And I think that was my first exposure to hard distance running, because the leader of that team was a, you know, somebody who would go out and run 24, 30 on a 5 mile cross country course. And he was somebody who liked to train hard. So when we were on the distance runs, they were always, you know, unless it was a day or two before a meet, they were always usually pretty intense. And the goal seemed to be to drop as many kids on the team as possible, as soon as possible. So especially the first 6-8 weeks, for me, the goal was just not to get dropped. But, you know, along the way, I got exposed to sort of running 8 mile runs, 10 mile runs. I don't know we didn't time the runs back then. It was just, they were just hard. And, you know, I had runs where I tied up and rigged up because I went into the season not having run a step. Again, we didn't run in the summer, so I didn't run in the summer before I started college. I was doing something else in the summer. And then after that, the senior moved on. And I, you know, because it was such a small program and we didn't have a lot of talent, I was probably one of the stronger runners on the team. So I got to have more influence on the kind of stuff we did in cross country, at least. And it basically continued the same kind of pattern. And again, because now I'm getting older, I'm a little stronger. And I think I had started running in the summer before my sophomore year. So I went into the season stronger. But the idea of sort of being responsible for your own program and making sure you executed the training plans, which basically were get out there every day and try to get 10 or 12 miles in. The individual was responsible for that. The coach wasn't going to crack the whip and probably wasn't going to kick you off the team if you missed a practice here or there. It was more of a partnership. So, and I think that suited my personality. I think I prospered more having the ability to kind of determine what I wanted to do, or at least feeling like I was in that position, than having somebody else telling me, you know, it's Wednesday, that means you're going to do X, Y, Z. In my experience, I actually ended up backing away from doing intense type workouts toward the end of my college career, because both my sophomore year and my junior year, I had injuries in the fall, which I think led to 8 or 10 weeks of no activity. And they were because I was doing intense efforts, not on the track, but on the roads, doing fartlek type stuff. And they were, I remember both were sort of team organized events. So I really didn't have the experience in college of trying to use intense efforts in practice to prepare for racing. My goal was just to stay healthy in my training so that I could participate in the races. And then use the knowledge I had acquired from, you know, by that point, 8 years, I don't know, 7 or 8 years of racing and intense interval training early on to guide me when I raced. So to help me gauge how I was feeling, although the approach to racing was, and again, this is not high level racing. The approach for me to racing, just like on those runs, to try to keep up as long as I could on the training runs, I would try to keep up in the races as long as I could. And then suddenly, you know, if you couldn't keep up anymore, then that's just what happened. And then eventually you might get to a point where you get deep into the race and you feel like you can go, you know, maybe you can kick or do something, but. Yeah, it would be interesting to have had access to some of that technology that you described that maybe is more common today that really helps evaluate in a training session if an athlete is overdoing it or underdoing it. Back then, I guess we would do it more intuitively. I used to think about it. In terms of am I making deposits or withdrawals? So a racing effort would be, in my mind, a withdrawal from, you know, an imaginary piggy bank, and a training effort ideally should be a deposit. And if I felt like I was putting in too big an effort, then I was probably making a withdrawal from the piggy bank, and I'd want that piggy bank to be as full as possible for the day that I wanted to make a big effort. So very, very crude and simplistic framework, but that's sort of how I thought about it. I mean, you have to have the strength, and I think you have to have sort of the muscular memory, familiarity with the higher tempos that you want to race at. So I think in my case, I got to that inadvertently because of the heavy intervals that I ran for 4 years. Well, I don't think you can look at the watch if you are doing a timed workout, and let's say you're running 200s and you're running them in 33. You can't look at that and say, okay, I'm doing the correct effort. I mean, if you're struggling to run 33 or you feel like you're not doing anything, then probably the time of 33 doesn't mean anything. You should be thinking more about what your effort level is. So if you feel like you're getting up toward your high end for the duration of that interval and it turns out to be 33, then that's probably 33 is probably good. And over time, over a number of years, you start to learn what some of those benchmarks are. And you can use those benchmarks when you race. So for me, learning, starting out running a quarter mile and basically just going all out, I learned what that felt like for a minute. So that's knowledge that I could bring to running other distances. And you recognize where, at what point and what it feels like when you're starting to get in trouble and starting to have lactic, especially on the track, lactic buildup. Yeah, I mean, my impression with an athlete like Ingebrigtsen is I don't think he's really paying much attention to that when he's doing the workout. It's more for the benefit of his coach who's trying to get information that tells him about his fitness level and how he's able to perform at different tempos and what that means maybe for his race schedule or his next race and what his goal is going to be and developing the overall program. Maybe on some days Ingebrigtsen would say, boy, that felt really hard, and the data would show, well, you actually weren't generating that much lactic acid. You probably could have kept pushing and you would have been okay. Well, that maybe suggests there's other things besides pure physiological factors that have an impact on performance. There could be mental issues, and it's way too complicated at that level for me to understand. But again, back to my approach and experience, my whole strategy, after I recovered from my second long injury halfway through my junior year, my whole strategy was not to have any more injuries so that I could do my final year and go to all the meets and do all the racing. So that meant I stayed away from any kind of an interval. I didn't go on the track. But I certainly carried what I thought was a pretty big workload, right? I would run, I was probably running consistently 70 to 90 miles a week. I'd build up to that point in the summer and then keep it going to the end of the spring season. And then when I was on those runs, I wasn't necessarily just, and I did most of my, after the cross country season, I was pretty much training by myself. So I wasn't just shuffling along. I was running, and if I felt better, I would run faster, but I would never totally put the hammer down. I would avoid trying to make withdrawals. I always would shut my run down a mile before it was over. And, always have in mind that you got to come back either later in the day or you got to come back tomorrow and do it again. So you want to feel good for that next effort. So, maybe that just means there's different ways to skin a cat. Plus, in college, you're racing all that. You race starting in September. You race almost every weekend. So you're actually getting, and when you race, you usually run at least two races, and sometimes you might run three. So in a sense, you are getting a so-called speed workout or an interval workout every 7 days. I suppose in a perfect laboratory, in perfect laboratory conditions, you could come up with the equivalent of the racing environment. And I assume that's what's going on. If teams aren't racing every weekend, they are probably doing other structured efforts, which are very similar to racing. I like the pattern of, you know, knowing once a week I was going to do something different. You know, it was a chance to kind of see what your fitness was and if you were making any progress. But it meant that at least for the day before a race and the day of the race, your training was totally different. You had a easy day of maybe 45 minutes of running the day before a race. And then obviously if you're running a track meet, the races themselves, you know, unless you're running a 5,000 or a 10,000, if you're running 800 in the mile, that's just a couple minutes of running. And then you might have 20 minutes, you know, to 30 minutes to get ready. And then maybe a 10 or 15 minute, maybe a 20 minute cool down. So that's an easy day. So that breaks up the week and kind of builds in sort of a recovery phase, in addition to giving you some speed. Cross country, same idea, only the races are more, for me, were more progressions towards getting ready for the track season, because running cross country was not my strong point. But I would get faster over the course of the season, but I was always well behind in the bigger races. And then when the track season would start, then it would be the opposite. Probably because of my background, you know, when I started out in the sport, running track. So, but when you leave college and you then don't have that structure of, you know, you have a season that's going to have 10, 8 or 10 meets, maybe 10 is too many, but maybe 8. And basically it seems like every weekend you're going to a meet. You're not going to have that when you finish school and you're an adult. So maybe in that environment, it becomes more important to, if you want to race at a higher level, to include structured intervals and efforts to kind of adapt and also gauge your progress. So I'm not advocating no intervals. I'm just saying, just for me, it happened to work out that, and I would prefer not to do intervals if I could avoid it, because they're usually not fun. So for me, in the circumstances, I just decided there was too much risk. But I found another way, I think, to get the same kind of benefits through my, you know, work that I did outside. So, you know, trying to do the Pine Tree store run, which I haven't obviously tried to do for quite a few years now, but I don't know. That's maybe, I don't know if it's the fun part, but it's part of it. I don't know why we started doing that, but it was, you know, a difficult enough effort because of the road surface and usually the weather conditions, that if you completed it, then you felt like you'd accomplished something. But it was always fairly traumatic. So the next day or two, you not feel very good. Time trial loop, what's nice about that is it's, you know, going over the same circuit over and over again that has different elements to it. And you can kind of gauge based on your past time on it, your fitness. So you wouldn't necessarily have to ride all out. But every once in a while, especially when we first started riding that loop, you would ride it all out because that's what a time trial is. And then you'd get this benchmark. So then the next year when you went out and you rode the time trial loop, and if you did it 4 minutes slower and you were struggling, then you knew you weren't, your fitness level wasn't very good. I mean, as far as riding with Cam, I mean, I don't deliberately, I mean, again, it sort of goes back to my attitude when I started running in college. I would try to keep up with the group. So if I can keep up, I keep up for as long as I can. And, you know, currently I usually run into issues sooner and more often if I go ride with somebody like Cam. And even, you know, and he's obviously not riding as hard as he can, but you know, I usually blow up sooner or later. So it's not like I'm executing these rides, but I don't mind struggling for a long time, because in cycling, you have opportunities to recover that you never have in running.
Right.
And you don't have the biomechanical problems in cycling that you have in running that are going to prevent you from running as fast as you get older. So you lose the ability to maybe go for a run with people that you might like to run with, but you can go for a ride with them. But you may be thrashing yourself when they're just going along and making a steady effort. But it's, you know, it's still fun to do. I think eventually, and I think you as well, I think we were down in that 43 or 42 minute area, and then Cam went out there and rode it in like 38 minutes, and then we kind of lost interest.
That's it for today's episode. There's more to this story, and I'm hoping that Dad will return to talk more about some of his experiences. If you're enjoying the podcast, check us out on Instagram at Black Cats Run. Stay tuned for more episodes, and we'll catch you next time.